This podcast is supported by Indeed.com, helping you find quality candidates with Indeed Instant Match. Indeed searches through millions of resumes in their database to help show you great candidates instantly. Receive a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/yourmoney. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's your money briefing for Friday, March 26th. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal. A year ago, millions of us had to figure out how to weave our workday into our life at home. Now, a year into remote working, the challenge facing a lot of people isn't when to work, but when to stop.
Many people are kind of discovering that work is really always there, that it's an email or Slack message. It's, you know, easy to open your laptop and go to the kitchen table where you've been spending most of your day working.
So how have workers adjusted, and what are companies doing to avoid burning out their staff? Our workplace reporter Chip Cutter has been looking into this, and he'll be here to talk about it after the break.
This podcast is supported by Indeed.com, helping you find quality candidates with Indeed Instant Match. Indeed searches through millions of resumes in their database to help show you great candidates instantly. Receive a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/yourmoney. Terms and conditions apply.
A year into the pandemic and working from home, many people are still struggling with a fundamental task, when to close the laptop for the day. So what can workers do to maintain work-life boundaries, and what are companies doing about it? Chip Cutter covers workplace issues for the Wall Street Journal. He's been looking into this, and he joins me now. Chip, thanks for being here.
Hi, JR. Thanks.
So Chip, you know, a year ago, a lot of people probably thought, yeah, working from home won't be too stressful. There'll be no one bothering me, no phone conversations going on around me.
Well, that's right. I think many thought that they could spend the extra hours that they used to spend commuting or going to the office, spending all of that on their personal health, on getting more physical fitness, on eating better. I think a lot of people had hopes that there might be some silver linings to this work from home reality. And what many have discovered over the past year is that they've just filled all this extra time with work, that they've just poured themselves into their jobs and now really struggle to figure out when work should stop. And I think that's been an issue across the corporate sphere, where many employees say that they just feel like there is now no clear end between the start and end of a day, and they just feel like they are just working constantly and feeling the effects of that.
Now, you've spoken to several people who've been working from home for the past year. What's the biggest challenge they're facing that's in the way of them achieving that balance?
Many people are kind of discovering that work is really always there, that it's an email or Slack message. It's, you know, easy to open your laptop and go to the kitchen table where you've been spending most of your day working, that there's no longer that physical separation of space. And I think that's been hard for a lot of professionals. And I think what most people will also say is that the demands have increased, that because there are so many fewer opportunities to focus on leisure activities still, that work has taken up more time, and that has meant that the pressures have grown on employees from managers and others. And I think it's been really hard to say no. It's been hard to figure out when to stop. And so many employees I've spoken with say that they really just are having difficulty sleeping now. They feel that they're overwhelmed. They just have those signs of burnout that they feel are really taking a toll on their mental health at this point.
So what are some people doing to try and separate their work hours from their time away from work?
So I spoke with an employment attorney who runs her own law firm and a consulting practice in Fairfax, Virginia, and she's done something creative. She started setting an alarm not to wake up in the mornings, but to tell her to go to sleep. She sets an alarm at 9:45 p.m. every night, and that's a reminder for her to close that Netflix show, to stop emailing, to not read that last news story, anything that she might have done that might have crept into her evenings, and it just is a reminder for her to go to bed. And she says that just setting that boundary can do a lot. She says there's a big difference on her mood and her, you know, productivity when she gets 8 hours of sleep versus six. And she, like many professionals, has said that, you know, she just can feel the strains of overwork if she's not careful. And this has been one small technique that she's actually found to be pretty helpful.
Well, that's a new business model for the alarm clock industry.
That's right. The late evening alarm.
And this isn't just on employees. What are some businesses doing?
Companies are trying a range of different techniques. Some of them are simple. The CEO of Accenture, for example, is you know, taking on a plan himself to take back lunch, to push his screens away and to be able to sit and have lunch in peace away from his phone and, you know, inbox. Other companies are trying to help people reset the goals, saying that not everything needs to be done right now. It's important to prioritize and figure out what must be done versus everything that you might want to do in the pandemic. And then you also see a number of managers really trying to step in and, for example, set office hours. At Slack, for example, a number of teams have kind of almost their version of college office hours, where teams might meet and talk with each other during a specific period of the day, and then people have the freedom to kind of spend the rest of the hours how they might need. Slack has also done something where the default meeting appointment time is now 25 minutes instead of 30, just a little bit of extra time back in people's schedules so they can use the restroom, do jumping jacks, whatever they might want to do. All of these are just various approaches that companies are trying to give people a little more flexibility to help them set those boundaries, but it's really tough. And I think it's also important to note that companies have benefited from all this extra work. Even as many now are trying to help people set boundaries, they've also been the ones that have kind of been able to get more done and been able to kind of see employees spend more time on work throughout the pandemic.
Right. This has got to be a balancing act for companies. There's definitely work to be done, but how productive are burned out employees?
It really is a balancing act, and companies are finding that. If employees just feel continually exhausted, feeling that by 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon, they need to take naps just because they're so tired of the work, companies realize that that's not good for anyone. And so to be able to kind of be able to get the best from employees, they need to kind of set better parameters that feel more sustainable. And so you see some companies now rolling out entire days off, mental health days that just let people step back. The German tech company SAP, for example, is doing this in April. Citigroup is going to do this as well. Just ways to kind of give people a little more time to focus on their mental health, the thinking that that might lead them to be more refreshed so they can go back and tackle the next work challenges.
It sounds like these are issues that both companies and employees are going to have to commit to resolve.
Well, even the best meeting managers can only do so much. And I think what many companies are finding is that even as they roll out these programs, as they try to reinforce boundaries, there is really nothing that a company can do to prevent someone from sitting at their kitchen table for 12 hours and toiling away. And I think that's been the real challenge for managers in all of this, is to how to really, really encourage people to step away when it's ultimately up to professionals, and it can be really difficult.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal reporter Chip Cutter. Chip, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.